Yeah, and here we go. The wooden wagon that Tom and I use faithfully to spread news and opinion for 3 hours makes its way back around the station, and it's bringing in the teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar. The teeny tiny lady needs to be brought in because she's in charge of all the letters, including letter of the day. Now, yesterday, Tom had mentioned, oh, I think this thing is worn out. It's welcome. Stop doing the wagon. And then you said, oh, no, no, no. Don't get rid of it. Get a cut from the Hateful Eight, because that a lot of that dialogue took place in a wagon.
That's right.
That was your suggestion. So here we go.
Sound to me you've been reading a lot of newspapers printed in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Anywho, I'm just trying to let y'all know how grateful I am.
Okay.
I was a goner.
What?
Y'all saved me.
You want to show me how grateful you are? Shut up.
Perfect. Kurt Russell.
Kurt Russell.
And Walter Goggins.
Yeah, Walter Goggins from a great show called Justified. Uh-huh. And he's in there with an actress, I'm blanking on her, Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's a heck of a movie. And now I feel like the show's come full circle. We now have Tarantino in the wagon.
There we go. I asked Kurt Russell once, why'd you do this movie? He said, I wanted to buy a new truck.
Oh, yeah. There's always the bottom line. That's like Michael Caine. Michael Caine said he grew up poor. Michael Caine has been in like 150 movies.
Guy.
They say, why don't you ever turn down a job? He says, I grew up poor. I'm never turning down money.
it's another chance, speaking of not turning down money, Felix Hernandez, Tom, the king himself. The announcement made yesterday, because he really struggled last year, and he got injured, he got sent down to the minors. The saddest thing is, you look at someone like Felix Hernandez, I used to take Rye to the games, and Rye's like, Dad, the guy's got 8 pitches, and all of them are absolutely unhittable,
yeah.
And you never knew what he was going to throw. And then as you watch Felix through the years, you say, well, he can't do that one anymore. That doesn't have the accuracy. But when he was at his prime, he was like a machine.
That's right.
It was crazy, crazy. And if we used to get good seats, when we knew that Felix was pitching, we would get the seats as close as we could, right behind
home plate.
Because we want to see that ball break. We want to see it slide in underneath. We want to see a fastball. The guy was unbelievable.
And Cy Young winner and should have won a second one. Yeah.
And then they had an entire section set up. Everybody had the K's
for the
King's
strikeouts.
Court. Right.
Yep.
And now, as time takes its toll on athletes, especially pitchers, for those shoulders and the little aches and pains to be able to turn that hip the way it is, he struggled last year. So the question was, would Felix come back again this year?
Obviously, Felix is going to get an opportunity to be in our rotation. That's what we're expecting him to take it and run with it. It's a big year for him. He struggled the last few years. We'll see what it brings. Talking with him a little bit yesterday, Felix is a competitor. He's a very proud player, like many veteran players are. He wants to get back to doing his thing. We're going to let him. We'll give him the ball and see what he takes and run with it.
The significance of that is that they're not making him go to the bullpen. You said they sent him down to the minors. I don't think he went to the minors, but they did put him in the bullpen.
Oh, he did?
And then Paxton got hurt, our lead pitcher, and so they put him back in the rotation, and they're allowing him to try to be one of our top 5 pitchers to be in the regular rotation. They're not talking about putting him in the bullpen, about which he was quite angry, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So the sad thing is, he's 33 years old. That's young in any other profession other than sports.
Mm-hmm.
But for him, he's like, this is the end of the road. And it's not pathetic, but it is kind of sad that this superstar is now realizing that last year, he says, if I'm as bad as I was last year, I'm not going to be of any value. I still think I have something in me. I still think I'm going to be able to pitch not only this year, but, years down the road. We'll have to see. But this is his year, if not last year, his year of reckoning. Because, what's it like to be at the top of the heap? I mean, again, a Cy Young winner, you're the best pitcher in the league when you win that, and he should have won a second one. He was that feared. They would do highlights of him on the national news broadcast whenever he pitched, because he was always so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's barely hanging on to the fifth slot.
Well, the thing is if you're one of the types of pitchers that he is, and depending on his age, so you look at somebody like Jamie Moyer. Moyer pitched, I think, until the age of 51 or something.
Yeah.
Now, he had no fastball. I think he hit like 83 miles an hour, but he had incredible accuracy.
Yeah.
So he didn't do the same sort of damage to his arm over and over again as somebody who Felix could throw incredible heat.
Yeah.
I think Steve Carlton would pitched until he was in his 40s or something.
Is that right?
Something like that in Philadelphia. All right. Well, we'll see what Felix is able to do. The NFL has got a problem when it comes to coaches hiring people that look and sound a lot like themselves.
Yeah, for some reason, and this is, there is something called the Rooney Rule in NFL, which means that if you're going to hire a coach, you have to interview at least one minority coach, because they realize that they have a minority issue. It's basically the players are minority majority, but the owners, you know, you could argue there aren't any minorities, or very few if there are. They say, and one of the problems about these coaching trees is, for instance, Rams hired Wes Phillips, who's the son of Wade Phillips, who's a coach of the Rams, and the grandson of Bum Phillips. So those of us old enough to know, he was the coach of the Houston Oilers. You've got three different Belichicks on his staff. You've got Mike Lombardi, the son of Mick Lombardi, the son of Mike Lombardi. You've got the Raiders about to hire Brian Callahan, son of Bill Callahan. And they say that basically every one of these sons has failed, or most of them have failed, and yet they keep hiring that. For some reason, they think, oh, well, it must be a genetic connection. If he grew up, he probably has the same kind of genius, and they say they're just not that many. The article that we're looking at in Deadspin compares it to the Kohanim of the Jewish temple period, a hereditary priestly caste completely closed off to those without the correct bloodline, and they say, what a joke this is, and they call them fail sons.
Yeah.
As they coin this word, failsons, and when they define it, they just says that all sons are to be considered fail sons until they prove otherwise, and yet we keep hiring them. Now, you could argue Wade Phillips may not be the greatest head coach, but as the son of Bum Phillips, he's considered one of the best defensive coordinators. In fact, he was the guy behind the defense of the Los Angeles Rams this year.
I think it might have been in Britain they actually came up with a nepotism rule that you weren't allowed to hand off your governmental position to someone that was related to you.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, in politics.
Into politics. Yeah. Is you had so many people sort of coming up and just handing it off to their kid.
Well, we did something similar to that in the cabinet, I think, when John Kennedy named Robert Kennedy his brother as the attorney general. They said, okay, well, there's no rules against it, but put in a rule.
It seems a little weird, yeah. Let's see. I found this really interesting little side note. Only 1.6% of college players go on to the NFL.
Wow, yeah.
Okay. But here's the amazing thing.
Yeah.
There have been 225 sets of dad played quarterback, son played quarterback.
Is that right?
224 times. So whether it's Greasy or Hasselbeck, not that good quarterback, but I think his dad was a tight end or something.
Yeah.
But the number of times, right? So Manning.
Yeah. Well, they say like Pat Mahomes, he's the greatest quarterback right now in the league. Perhaps his dad was like a professional baseball player. So it might not even be the same sport. But that makes some sense. Maybe not so much with coaching, but there are genetic lines that seem to prosper. Then you've got Ken Griffey Jr.
Yeah.
Why is Ken Griffey Jr. Jr.? Because his dad was a superstar baseball player as well. So there are DNA reasons for, at least athletically, it looks like.
Bill Cosby's spokesperson said that Bill has been in prison now, jail now, for about a year or something like that, maybe half a year. And when they're asking him how he's doing in prison, the spokesperson says,
he looks really amazing.
That from the man who spent every moment with Bill Cosby during both of Cosby's sexual assault trials in Montgomery County. Andrew Wyatt's been Cosby's right-hand man for almost a decade. Even now, Wyatt's on the payroll, visiting his boss every other week.
He's down to 195 pounds. He hasn't eaten any bread, no dessert. And he hasn't drank any coffee since he's been in there. Now, the funny part about it, Mrs. Cosby has been trying to stop him from drinking coffee for 55 years. And she said it took this to stop him from drinking coffee.
The visits take place here at SCI Phoenix, the new maximum security prison in Collegeville, Montgomery County.
Right now, I'm his only visitor outside of his attorneys. And that's the way he wants it.
So Camille Cosby has not visited.
She has not visited him.
Mm.
He does not want her to visit him.
Wyatt told me Cosby prefers to speak to his wife by phone three times a day for 3 minutes, the most he's allowed. And Cosby's day begins before dawn.
And he said, wake me up at 3:30 a.m. They wake him up at 3:30 a.m. and he exercises. He's in his cell. He does leg lifts. He pushes up against the bed and does push-ups to stay in shape. He showers and he waits for breakfast.
When you hear him describe how he's surviving, what do you think?
He's mentally strong. He's just a strong man.
How long is he in there for?
Well, I think for the rest of his life. I thought it was a long enough sentence that people didn't expect him to get out.
Well, he'll probably sit up for some parole or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's up there already, so.
Yeah. He looked really bad. I think whether it was manipulated. But remember how bad he looked? And his attorney kept saying, you know, he's practically blind.
Yes.
And his health is beginning to go. And please have some mercy on this guy. Don't send him away.
Yeah, he seemed hobbled. He had a cane and all. Maybe, physically he's in good shape. But, there is the psychological toll of prison. And I don't know if it's hit him yet or not. You could be as fit as a fiddle in prison. But, you know, the psychology of it is going to be tough, I would assume.
Google Maps wants to help you. If you ever watched anybody, they come out of a subway or they get off a bus or get out of their car and they say, oh, let's say we want to go to that seafood restaurant that's down the street. So you punch it into the address. It comes up on Google Maps. And then you see the two people staring at the phone, looking at it, staring at it like the Shroud of Turin or something. They can't quite make out, like, wow, that is what now, where are we? Yeah, so then you always do this thing where you say, well, we can either walk that way or that way. And it seems like no matter what choice you've made to walk that way, it's always the wrong choice. You get to the next corner, and then the satellite picks you up, and you're like, oh, it's back that way.
The key is to figure out how to translate a 2D image into a 3D reality. And Google thinks it's getting there. So it's just a beta a test right now, but they're giving certain people these phones to try out. So when you come out of your subway, now most people don't have subway systems, but it's when you're traveling. If you travel to a big town, you may be on the subway. But, you know, you get off a bus, you're just in a strange town. You don't know which way to go, left or right, which way is north and south and all that. They now are trying out, and they say it's still early stages. But when you come, you're on a streets post, instead of having to look down at your phone, what they'll do is you just hold your phone up to whatever building you're looking across from, and it will recreate that building with an arrow about which way you should go. And they have floating, almost like in midair on your screen, Harrison Avenue, and you know exactly where you are. Okay, so this is Harrison, this is that. It looks fantastic. And then, of course, when you get to your destination, they're going to have this huge, again, visually on the photo, it like takes up a third of the building. You have those big red markers where the thing is.
Go,
oh, that's it, right across the street. I think this is brilliant. Now, they do say that one of the problems about this is it's dependent, obviously, on GPS. And when you, which is a magnetic connection you need to have with a tower, if you are in a big building where there are all sorts of, or a big city where there are all these big downtown buildings, there are all these other magnetic forces that get in the way. And so they still haven't figured out that. But in terms of just a direction, that'll be much helpful. You'll save at least a block walking the wrong direction because you'll know based on your camera what it's supposed, which way you're supposed to go.
Way to go, Google.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant move. But they do say this is still the early stages. They're going to have to do a lot of testing.
It is interesting that the article that was in the Wall Street Journal a number of months ago saying that smartphones and apps have sort of plateaued.
And that
the smartphone is sort of not taken off. And that's one of the things that Apple said, we don't expect revenues to be as high as they will be because what's the next step for this phone?
Well, everybody needs a smartphone. They just don't need a new smartphone.
Right.
Baby.
That's what they
problem.
Found. That, yeah, but gotcha. Because the new one, what was the new one doing when you compare the new one to the old one?
Yeah.
You can get the apps in there, but what's ultimately... What's the next step for this device? How can they make it something that everybody needs to have? But they're making, along the fringes, they're improving their services. The arm's length for tattoos finally becomes uncool. Is that the sleeve one?
The sleeve. Well, it's two high-profile examples. Adam Levine at the Super Bowl.
Right.
And then apparently Vogue magazine has Justin Bieber on the cover the same week. And they not only have sleeve tattoos, they have full body, full chest. They're like the Illustrated Man tattoos. And at this point, there's this interesting article written by a guy who has recently gotten tattoos that he suddenly feels embarrassed because he's wondering if tattoos have jumped the shark, that they've actually gone mainstream when you have full body tattoos by two prominent pop culture guys. And he doesn't personally identify that much with, as he calls it, the curiously popular Maroon 5 lead singer Adam Levine and or Justin Bieber. He's sort of saying, oh, and one of the problems he has, the reason they're not cool, Adam Levine's tattoos are not cool, they look way too new. They're too sharp. He says anything, a new tattoo looks like you're a Johnny Come Lately, and he has to admit they're the writer of the story, Adam Gabbett. He says, yeah, I'm kind of embarrassed too because they're relatively new. It took him 14 years to finally get around to getting it. And he says, I wonder if I waited too long and now he's embarrassed. So the question is, are they now finally uncool?
Well, once you get a certain percentage of people begins to get tattooed, you have too many people with too many tattoos, and then why do you have a tattoo? So then the thing is, it flips the other way. The paradigm shift is to have no tattoos. Well, too late for those people.
Yes. No,
so
I know.
Those that don't have tattoos.
Well, suddenly, can you imagine if you're an Adam Levine type? Now, Adam Levine's rich as Midas, and he doesn't care. He's an entertainer. But if you went the full body length, and suddenly you realize the culture, the tipping point in the
flipped
culture.
Flipped on you?
Flipped, and now you're
No. That's when you get the tattoo across your forehead that reads regret. That's why I was going to get the Milton Friedman tattoo on my shoulder.
That's right. I still want you to.
No, because you don't put a bumper sticker on a Ferrari.
Yeah, that's my line that I use. That was used on my daughter, and I told it to you, and now you use it.
I use it now. Because I also realized if I did have a Milton Friedman tattoo on my shoulder, how many times do you think that would come up in conversation?
Yes, all the time.
All the time. I'd have to always bring it up.
And then you'd have to explain that he's not Marty Feldman.
Right. And then like, you know, Milton Friedman. And then I'm like, don't you know, University of Chicago, economist, Nobel Prize, he and his wife, 7 best-selling. And they'd be like, huh? Right? We lost something. Then I got to put my shirt back on.
So the moment's passed.
Dumb. Milton Friedman could have told you that the Panera Bread socialist pay what you want experiment would fare miserably. The story breaks as the Panera Bread closes. The last
Panera Bread. We want to talk about Peppa Pig.
Oh, Peppa Pig. Peppa Pig is a show that now kids listen to. And the problem with Peppa Pig is it is a show that has a – get ready, Andrew. Wake up in there. Parents are having their kids listen to Peppa Pig, and now the kids are developing British accents.
Madam Gazelle, we came to school on our scooters today.
Very good, Peppa and George. Let's all paint pictures of how we came to school today.
I came on my bicycle.
Very good.
I walked here.
So nice to get the fresh air in your lungs.
Where's she from all of a sudden?
That's a little... Like the French nanny.
Okay, and the American kids
are now
imitating.
Okay, so that's the show, and now American kids are picking up.
Peppa, George, Daddy likes a cup of tea.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's cute.
Nothing wrong with that. Hold on, let's check with our... Ready? Hold on, Andrew.
Madam Gazelle, we came to school on our scooters today.
We came to school on our scooters today.
Very good, Peppa and George.
Very good, Peppa and George.
There you go.
Wow.
Nothing wrong with that.
Andrew's spot on.
I don't have a problem. If my kids were to pick up a British accent.
I know. They'd sound smarter already.
Wouldn't they, though? As long as you don't go over there, spend 6 weeks over there, and come back with a British accent. Like Madonna.
That's phony.
I hate that. Oh, yeah, we went on holiday. No, you didn't. You didn't go on holiday because 6 weeks ago I saw you and you're not on holiday. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was over there and I just picked up the accent.
I think it's amazing that a kid's show, because they're so adaptive, they have so few experiences that they would just pick up as natural an accent.
Yeah, you get it. You're there from the back seat.
Peppa, George, Daddy likes a cup of tea.
my friend is Dutch, and she's having a baby.
Yeah.
And you know, the Dutch can't pronounce TH. Did you know that?
No, is that right?
I said, you're passing on a speech impediment to your kid. I hope you're happy. Right back.
Online Trading Academy.
You get a car and you get a car. Don't you miss Oprah? Honestly, I do.
Do you?
Thank you, Lisa Brooks. Yeah, I used to love watching Oprah. 4 o'clock, I'd run home to watch.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe.
Oh, I watched almost every single Oprah show. Seriously, when I sat down to interview, I was like, I love you. She's like, really? Oh. And I said, oh, my God, I've seen every show. I've seen them all. I love. Yeah, there's something about it. Just, I don't know why. Just compelling, great television, great stories, well told.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you're a much bigger fan than I am. I'm just surprised because politically, you're so not her.
No, I know, but it doesn't matter. There's stories about America. I don't see politics like you do everywhere else.
That's great.
Online Trading Academy, 98973.
That's
the good
for
Republicans
sure.
over there at Online Trading Academy, 98973.
Well,
I missed the weather. I was talking to Dory. Is it going to snow?
No. The idea here is that it's going to freeze, so whatever has fallen, but whatever has fallen is going to be rain, not snow.
Okay, because I have to drive from here to Portland.
I know. You just told us that. Don't do that.
I have to do that. I bought tickets to see Steph Curry play the Trailblazers tonight. That's tonight.
Oh, my God.
And Ryan said, Dad, I got to ask you something. These tickets aren't cheap. Why are you doing this? I said, the only time I'm doing this. Here's why I'm doing this. Because you know what? I'm going to be dead someday, okay? I could die tomorrow. I could die the next day.
I could die on the road to Portland
so hold
this
on.
Weather. Okay.
At least let's watch the game.
Okay.
So I said, I could be dead in, let's face it, life's about experiences. So you think you might die before LeBron James comes from L.A. Lakers to play the Trailblazers? Can you try to hang on for that ticket? I was like, okay. At least pros before swine. I try to be emotional with the kids. I try to be able to have a heart. And there's just nothing but jokesters talking.
They're not ready for those emotions. You're a grown ass man. As they say.
you
can afford to have emotions. Kids can't have emotions.
You don't think so?
No, I mean, they have them. They can't afford to show them. Come on, you were a 17-year-old boy or a 15-year-old boy. I don't know how old Rye is, but
he's 16.
Yeah. So, I got it pretty close.
Yeah.
So the idea is that he can't show it. You can show it. And
but
then
in
goes,
the movies,
oh,
they show it.
Yeah, and those are always phony. No, the idea is that he'll remember this. It'll register with him. If you get emotional about him, it'll register with him that you were emotional.
What, 10 years later?
No, but the thing is, he won't show it. Yeah, 10 years later, he'll probably show it. When he becomes a dad himself, he'll suddenly understand you much better.
Sucks. I can't even hug him anymore. I can't hug him. And Charlie gives me the side hug.
Oh, that's what's wrong with that? You don't need
that. My kid. I was kissing him just a couple years ago, and now they won't even let me touch him.
And tomorrow you'll be dead. I know. I mean, life sucks.
How enforceable is that restraining order? I ask you. All right, here we go. Well, we don't talk about what we don't talk about. We talk about serial killers. And serial killers have been more and more in the news since Netflix and others and HBO has jumped on and done the entire thing on Ted Bundy and then others ones. I have all the serial killers to be followed. Ted Bundy, I think, is fascinating in the two personalities that he had. But I just think it's just as far as graphic, disgusting serial killers, I would go Dahmer over Bundy.
Ah, yes. Well, you know, what's interesting about Dahmer, though, is most of his victims weren't women. And they say one of the problems. So this is an analysis from somebody who herself has had a best friend murdered in 2001. I mean, so this is a long time ago. And it turns out that she was murdered by a serial killer. They didn't know this at the time, obviously. So she's done a lot of obsessing about serial killers. And her reflection on this is that, serial killers seem to be having a moment right now. And one of the problems with that is that moment, all crime storytelling and the media tends to be formulaic and male-driven when they tell these kinds of stories. And that she's afraid that we're titillated by the gore and the extreme violence. And for some reason, women's bodies are selected as the outlet for that violence. That's her main takeaway from this. And she says she knows what a waste of time it is to try to zero in on the mind of a serial killer. Because she says, because I did it for 10 years. And at the end of that 10 years, I realized I'm wasting my time. That there's nothing inherently more interesting about a killer. He just basically has, that whatever human psychology there is not any more complicated than anybody else's psychology. You're ending up spending all this time to explain something that is ultimately not that interesting or inexplicable. And she just thinks that we need to refocus everything. Now, we've heard this all the time about, victims. We should be focusing on the victims. The problem is, the reason we don't is because most victims are like us. We're just regular Joes.
Right.
What makes somebody distinctive is somebody who's willing to do something horrible to the regular Joes. And so we focus all the attention there. And she says that's something that we just really ought to, reconfigure. Or also why the obsession is with women's bodies. I mean, most of the serial killers go after women. Now, it's interesting that you introduced this. I mean, I read this. You introduced it saying, I find Jeremy Dahmer much more interesting.
Yes.
He was cannibalistic, and he went after men. Now, I think was he gay too?
I mean, there's
a homosexual component, but she just says that there are a lot of things going on right now, and the good thing, because of things like school shootings and all these horrible other things, right now she thinks that serial killers will wane in terms of their interest. Like, they're peaking right now, but right now a serial killer doesn't seem as scary as a lot of things happening in the world right now, like terrorism and school shootings and those kinds of things. It is kind of a reflective examination of why we are interested in what we're interested in. It sort of made me rethink things, because I do find Ted Bundy fascinating, and I go, yeah, but why?
Well, she's basically saying that you take a long journey, and when you get there to the end of the journey, it is not that interesting, because there's the guy just kills people.
I mean, it could be a biological impulse. It could be a bad childhood impulse. It could be a hatred of mother impulse. But whatever you do, when you figure it out, you go, yeah, that's just not that insightful.
You know who I felt was interesting and that I would like to know more? I forget what they finally found out about it. Remember in Washington, D.C. and Northern Virginia, the guy that was going around shooting people, just randomly shooting people out of the back of his car.
Yes.
He had that young, and he was from here. And then he moved to Washington, a bunch of places. I think he might have served in the military. He had a young kid with him, and he took a high-powered rifle with a scope and would just park the car in a parking lot and then shoot across the street to a gas station and kill people.
Yeah. Yeah, the D.C. sniper. I mean, it was like, you had no idea how terrifying that would be because he would kill people in a parking lot, at a gas station, in a grocery store. Right. I mean, that really is stunning. The problem is again, we're focusing on him, although there doesn't seem to be the kind of fascination with him once they got caught, the two of them, as there is with Ted Bundy. And it might, I mean, here we have to admit it. If you're talking about titillation, you've got Ted Bundy who's looking like a movie star. That makes him more appealing, and maybe on a horror level scale, that kind of extreme violence from a beautiful person is seen as sexier or something, more worthy of our attention.
The weird sort of parasitic nature of art, if you call it that, sort of piggybacking on top of real lives. So when you talk about Ted Bundy and the people that were killed by Ted Bundy, some of the victims' relatives and friends are upset that it gets glorified.
Absolutely.
Right? Because you're using facts and you're telling stories, and that's my mom, or that was my sister, or that was my girlfriend. That's what makes it so difficult for people. So Netflix found themselves in a bit of a problem because they actually had footage of a real, was it a train that went off the track?
Yeah, an explosion. Yeah, I think it was a tanker.
Tanker.
Explode, an oil train, yeah.
Yeah, and it went off the track, went down, I think killed 48 people. And Netflix had the video or had the film, and they were thinking about using it in Bird Box, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they did. They used it.
I thought they weren't allowed.
No. They used it, and they refused to take it out. The same footage was used in two movies, and in one it was, a TV effort. They agreed to take it out of one, but Netflix didn't. But the thing is, they bought it from a company who deals in this kind of stuff, and they say this is a long Hollywood history, that when you have disaster things, you often take real-life footage, and you just pay for it, and you put it in your movie. Mm-hmm. Well, the mayor of this particular town says, that was the worst day in the city's life, 47 people died, and you are commercializing that and using it to your own advantage. How dare you? But right now, the rules are such that is allowed unless you pass new legislation. I think this has happened in Canada, so that's what they're looking into.
Oh, making to pass it that you wouldn't be able to use
that
anymore. Yeah.
Because as of now, it's a long Hollywood tradition wasn't even aware of.
We'd think that they would be more sensitive to that and not run it.
Yeah. It's a sci-fi film that they use it in. And they did take it out in one, but Bird Box is such a hit, maybe Netflix feels like it's too late.
Let's see your opportunity to be heard on the radio. Questions, comments, and concerns are always welcome. You can get to us at email backup.
It is.
Oh, hey, hallelujah. Right.
That's good. You can also get on the Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. Letter of the day coming up. We'll be right back. Care Partners Senior Living, thanks a lot for sponsoring the mail. And if you have a mom or a dad and they're getting up there, Tom is going to have to face this at some point. We did this with my mom back in Philadelphia. Went around, looked for a good place, took mom, and she's quite happy. She had lots of friends. That's the great thing about Care Partners Senior Living. They really have established wonderful communities for your mom and dad, for your loved one. And here comes the mailman now.
Am I happy? No.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Yeah, there we go. Right to the door. There's a teeny tiny lady. There she is right there. Hey, teeny tiny. She's going to tell us about love of the day. First, let's get started. Oh.
So there are some food protests, boycotts at prisons to protest the cold morning biscuits they're getting instead of hot food. 253 writes in, Tom, you refer to prisoners as clients. They're not clients. Call them prisoners or the incarcerated.
Yes. 206, all our local grade schoolers have rebelled against attempts to give them healthier food. I would shudder to think what a hardened biker would do if I offered him a cold whole grain muffin.
And 360, you have one officer for 250 inmates, so you need to keep the inmates happy to maintain staff safety. TVs and weight rooms means are better for everyone.
And Chuck E. Cheese, 360, says, finally, I can add another conspiracy theory to my list. Contra, let's see, underwater UFO bases, and now Chuck E. Cheese. Do you guys think the place is named that because can't chuck the cheese in the garbage?
On Lorena Bob, you're still mulling that one over. That's kind of funny. So you can't throw them away.
I.
You take them and you make them part of the next pizza.
Yeah.
You know how conspiracies work. On the Lorena Bob story,
dumb.
253 ins and outs, snips and cuts.
I don't. Okay. 425, everyone's giggling about the man losing his member, but if a woman's breast was cut off, it would be a national PSA.
So is that true? Are we anti-male or anti-female?
We treat men differently than women differently when it comes to rape, when it comes to assaults like that.
Yeah, but yeah. See, because that's a crucial issue, but it goes both ways. Because the Lorena Bobbitt story, she was not given much credence because of what she did to the man. So it flips. There are both sides. Okay, 253, Tom and Curly, you haven't lived until you've seen the John Wayne Bobbitt porn movie Severed Parts with the soundtrack from Motorhead and Lemmy the Singer.
Have you seen it, Tom?
Yeah, I'm hopped up on you, John. Yeah.
Okay, emails 360.
Is that what we watched over at your place? I didn't realize.
Has some hacker taken over the Northwest to my Northwest.com email and holding it hostage? If they want a ransom, the TNC listeners could take up a collection.
On the Burger King bathroom story, 360 writes in, I'm single and I courtesy flush just for me.
I'd like to start a national trend when it comes to that. I got locked in the Broiler Bay bathroom in Bellevue, and when I got out, the store was closed. Thank you, 425. Did that just recently happen to them? The first person they wrote was us.
The Valentine's Day candy.
Yes.
206 says they changed the flavors. They turned gross. Oh,
that's one of the flavors.
Yeah.
Gross. 206, I use Necco wafers to quit smoking.
And 253, yes, you can still get them. They are Brack's brand at Target.
Oh,
Necco wafers or
the little sweethearts? Like, weird little thing.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, no. The little sweethearts.
Yeah.
Larry, the good, bad, and the ugly. Larry in West Seattle. Wow, what a show. The good, birthday dates posted next to the urinals. The bad, broadcast booth smells like Dutch oven lobster. And the ugly, never again will I be able to slip a 7-Eleven hot dog into its wrapper. Sorry about that, Larry.
On the Google Maps story, Gloria in the 707. Tom, has anyone ever heard of paper maps? I just had to open a beautiful paper map in any city, and locals would walk me to the place I was searching. Oh, that's good. She didn't use the paper map, except this woman doesn't
they do
know
help
where she's
you.
Going. That's great.
Peppa the Pig, 425. My 8-year-old picked up an English accent, but not from Peppa, though. I think it was from the classic Mary Poppins.
Oh, that would be sweet. I wonder if she or she sang, too. On John's Portland trip, 253 says, John, Amtrak it, baby. If that's an option, the only way to go to the Rose City.
I would. We could get on the 120, but then the next train coming back after the game is in the morning. We wouldn't be here in time for the show. 253, I totally just made my day to hear Tom called John a grown-ass man. Laughed out loud. I don't know. Just something about the phrase coming out of his mouth really tickles me. Say it again, Tom.
John, you're a grown-ass man.
Oh, wow. Right. Oh, wow. Teeny Tiny.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Teeny Tiny picks the letters, by the way.
Comes from Higgy in Rochester.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah. Having Hannah Scott at an undisclosed location as the show's designated survivor was a brilliant move. Someone has to survive if the show craters and you are no longer number 73 in Zimbabwe. Love the show and the team that fixed the email. Here, here.
By the way, how are we doing in Zimbabwe?
I think as well as ever.
Seriously. Remember we pandered to them for 2 hours?
Great. We need to check the, who was it? Aaron Mason maybe knows.
Yeah.
Out of time. Bye-bye.